Gary U.S. Bonds got his start singing in public when he was growing up in Norfolk. Back then, he was known as Gary Anderson. Inspired by the rhythm and blues records he heard on the radio, he started singing harmony with a group of his friends.
When you're a teenager, you listen to all of the stuff on the radio and you try to emulate a lot of the people that you see.
That's Gary U.S. Bonds.
My basic people that I like was Clyde McFadder and Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke and the Drifters, the Coasters, you know, all that group there, you know. So we tried to emulate them and actually got a group together. And we used to perform on the street corner there, right near my house, every night.
Well, I wish that I could have myself a 7-day weekend.
Gary's original goal in performing was to attract girls, but he sang well enough to come to the attention of a record store owner and producer named Frank Guida. Guida distributed African-American recordings, he started several music labels, and he aspired to produce hit records.
He came by one of the when we were singing on the corner, and he used to stop and listen to us. That's where he decided he wanted to record us. Ask us if we'd come into a studio once he built it. And he did build it about 2-3 years later.
Good to his word, Frank Guida arranged to record Gary at a studio that he purchased and retrofitted in what you might call Spartan fashion.
It was just a big open room. Had semi-partitions for the engineer. But it was basically just egg crates and the isolation. I mean, the sound booth for the singer, for the lead singer, was the bathroom. And that's where I would get deposited every time we did a session. But it was kind of cool because I had it all to myself.
I said, hey.
Guida's makeshift studio included a concertone monaural recorder and a two-track Ampex recorder. There was a lot of sound manipulation in Guida's records, and Gary's voice was layered on top of itself or overdubbed several times.
Yeah, we overdubbed a lot. I think basically it started out overdubbing because when we did the sessions, I couldn't be heard as much, so we'd re-record my voice again. I'd sing as close to what I had originally sung, so the voice could get out front. I think that was the main purpose in the beginning, and then that turned into the thing that we did the most because it made the created sound.
New Orleans was sent to DJs with misleading labels that read, Buy U.S. Bonds. Guida's hope was that they would play the record, thinking it was a public service announcement. Strangely, the gimmick was effective. New Orleans shot up to number 6 in the Billboard pop charts in the fall of 1960. Guida told Gary Anderson, from now on, you're Gary U.S. Bonds. New Orleans didn't become a hit strictly on the basis of Guida's strange marketing schemes. It sounded like nothing anyone had heard before. The bass drum dominated the mix, the layered vocals were unusually intense, and the overall sound was muffled and lo-fi. These impressionistic qualities were even more exaggerated on a subsequent record Guida produced that became Gary U.S. Bond's biggest hit, 2:45.
I'm paraphrasing this quote, but there was a critic who said that he had played 2:45 on sound systems ranging from $50 to $10,000, and it sounded exactly the same.
Don Harrison is a writer, archivist, and radio host who's written a lot on the Norfolk Sound. He says that the whoosh of sound that was a result of all the overdubbing was a big part of what made Guida's output unique, but there were other idiosyncrasies just as peculiar that distinguished his recordings.
Another component to that and many other Norfolk Sound recordings was the sort of party-like atmosphere that was manufactured. A lot of the songs would start with, whooping voices, hand claps. You were obviously being transported right into the middle of a party. This was something that Guida came up with before 2:45. This was something that, this was his sound. This is something he liked.
Tell me one thing, are you getting that feeling? Yes, my man. Well, look here, does it make you feel like reeling? Yes, my man. Well, look here, do you think the music's moving? Yes, my man.
Another component of the Norfolk sound was the underlying influence of calypso music, something that Frank Guida came into contact with in World War II.
When he served in the Army, he served over in Trinidad, and there he heard a lot of the great calypso singers when he would go to the officers' club. A lot of those songs eventually made it onto Norfolk Sound recordings. In other words, he kind of reappropriated them, kind of rejiggered them. They don't really sound much like the original calypso versions, but he definitely took that as his influence.
One calypso number that Guida offered to Gary U.S. Bonds, he rejected, so Guida gave it to another Norfolk Sound artist, Jimmy Soul. It became a huge hit. Bonds and Guida eventually parted ways, but even if they hadn't stopped seeing eye to eye, the British invasion, especially the Beatles, put a damper on Gary U.S. Bond's career.
It kind of slowed everybody down during the time that they came about. Everybody was scrambling to try to stay afloat during that time. They kind of took over the music business there for a minute, but we survived.
By the late 1960s, Gary U.S. Bonds found himself in the odd position of performing in nostalgia shows while he was still a young man. There were a lot of hotel lounge gigs in the years that followed, and he enjoyed some success with songwriting, but things just weren't the same as they were in the early 1960s. Then in 1976, a fateful meeting with Bruce Springsteen reinvigorated his career. It turned out that the boss acknowledged a huge debt to Gary U.S. Bonds. He repaid that debt by collaborating with them on new recording projects.
I mean, what actually got me back on the charts again was the couple of albums that we had, and one actually gave me a number 5 Billboard charted record, which was This Little Girl Is Mine. From that, we had Jolie Blonde, and we had Out of Work, and Daddy's Come Home, and, bunch of great stuff. It was really good. Another tremendous talent that helped me out.
At the 2016 Richmond Folk Festival, Bonds will reunite with saxophonist Gene Barge, who played on many of his hit records in the 60s. Barge was a school teacher and the go-to saxophonist when R&B acts like James Brown or Little Richard came through Hampton Roads. Don Harrison says in later years, Gene Barge became a very influential musician and producer in his own right.
Gene Barge is really just a powerhouse figure in popular music. He played the influential sax solos on Chuck Willis's C.C. Rider and Betty and Dupree. Fast forward to, say, 10 years ago, and he's playing on Public Enemy Records. In the middle, he's touring with the Rolling Stones.
He's winning a Grammy for producing Natalie Cole. He gets Buddy Guy his recording contract with Chess. This is a guy who seems to have been everywhere over the years and doing a lot of different things, not just playing the sax, but writing, producing.
Gene March is now a very youthful 90 years old. Frank Guida, the record store owner who instigated and produced all the Norfolk Sound recordings, died in 2007. Harrison says a reunion of Gary U.S. Bonds and Gene Barge might not have happened when Guida was still alive.
Toward the end of his life, Guida didn't want to have too much to do with them. He would kind of disparage them in interviews and even claim that their contributions were minimal, which all you have to do is hear the music and it's hogwash.
Despite the differences that surfaced between Frank Guida and some of the artists he produced, Harrison says his contributions to the evolution of rock and roll music were undeniable. His Norfolk Sound recordings preceded the innovations of the Beatles and Phil Spector.
Of course, there were plenty of regional hit makers, but Frank really was the first that I can think of that was making and marketing music based on having a distinctive studio-manipulated sound. That was something that didn't come into being until years later. In fact, there's a pretty famous column that the British pop impresario Jack Good wrote in a British trade magazine all about how Quarter to Three was this revolutionary record that was going to usher in a new wave of sound in pop music. Don't you know that I danced till the quarter of three over in the head that night with Eddie and Dee. Why, he was swinging on the sax with the terror of the two, and I was dancing all over the room. Don't you know the people were... Gary U.S. Bonds and Gene Barge will recreate the Norfolk Sound at the 2016 Richmond Folk Festival. You can find more information and a schedule of their performances at richmondfolkfestival.org. Also, at 3:45 Saturday afternoon at the Folk Festival at the West Rock Foundation stage, Don Harrison will moderate a discussion with Gary U.S. Bonds and Gene Barge called Quarter to Three, The Norfolk Sound. Okay.